This is the 343 Podcast. I'm your host, John Pronich. Welcome to the show. Just as it's important to discern what is a much preferred team environment for player development, so is the capacity to discern what an elite player is and isn't. Having a good model for elite allows you to properly calibrate your measuring stick and, consequently, be able to better identify, judge, and rank the shortcomings in your player. That in turn makes you a better mentor, a better coach, a better player, and even a better fan of the game. So in this episode, Gary Kleiman joins me to discuss elite soccer player characteristics and some ways that you can better calibrate yourself to judge a player's true quality. We'll get started with our discussion right after this short message about our online coaching education program. Thank you so much for being here with us. When it comes to coaching education, being able to discern what will and won't help you can be costly and confusing. The internet is flooded with so much information. There are tons of drills out there for you to watch and tons of things that you can try with your players and teams. But without the proper context and the proper guidance from a legit mentor, you are not going to get the edge that you are looking for or the results that you want. That's what the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program gets right. It's rooted in the real experiences of a master practitioner that has coached soccer right here in America. As a coach, Brian Kleiman has been able to overcome all of the obstacles and produce college-level, professional, and international-caliber players. Training just twice per week, field congestion, pay-to-play, you name it. But using the 343 framework and staying consistent with the methodology has led to tremendous success. What the 343 coaching program offers you is a look at Brian's actual work, his real art. It's all captured and delivered to you in its purest form to help you gain an advantage and become a better coach. This exclusive online program features videos of Brian mic'd up during actual training sessions with his real players and teams as they prepare for league games and tournaments. This is the only program in the country that gives you this type of authentic, behind-the-curtain look at player, team, and coach development. It's unlike anything else in this country. It cannot be replicated, and it's not theory or speculation like you'd see in a presentation or something staged like you'd get at a convention. So if you're looking for drills, we've got those, but more importantly, we have the mentorship, the proven results, and the community of ambitious coaches that you won't find anywhere else. To experience all of this, consider joining the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program. You can find all of the details at 343coaching.com. So another topic that is not hotly debated, but just, I think, misunderstood, and then that creates a little bit of conversation around, like, what is an elite player and what isn't. And you wrote an article a while back about, you know, what characteristics elite players may or may not have. And I guess we can kind of start with maybe your definition or your idea of what elite means, and then we can just maybe go from there about maybe talking about some of the specifics around what makes a player elite or not.
Okay, so my mind goes to first maybe discussing elite teams, because I think it's a little bit easier to characterize and set ourselves up for an individual player discussion. It's not as controversial, I think, to be able to label FC Barcelona, especially during the Pep era, as an elite club or an elite team. Why? Well, they won everything. They won all the trophies. And if you fast forward to today, while they might be struggling compared to that prior standard, I don't think anybody will really raise an eyebrow if somebody calls FC Barcelona an elite team or an elite club. Why? Because they fucking win. And there's an objective metric associated with that. And they do very well in global competitions and not just in their domestic arena. So I think that is an interesting segue into talking about individuals, because then it all of a sudden starts getting controversial if you start talking about what is a world-class player, what is an elite player because the individual themselves doesn't really win trophies. While they might win awards, those awards are subjective based most of the time. Like, what is the FIFA World Player of the Year? Who's on the FIFA Best 11? You know, what is the best goal scored of the year? Things of that nature aren't strictly objective. There is a voting mechanism and everybody has their opinions. So we already have a little bit of a disconnect with regard to who is at the top of the heap. So I'm trying to set ourselves up. So now that we talk about individuals, it starts becoming a little bit more subjective, but we can calibrate ourselves. Okay. So if you're in the FIFA World 11, for instance, it's a pretty safe bet that you can say those 11 players are quote unquote elite. It's a pretty safe bet that you can call them world class. So if you calibrate yourself to those individuals, if it's Sergio Ramos, you calibrate yourself, that's an elite defender. If you're Messi, that's an elite striker / winger / false nine / all the positions he always plays. Same with Cristiano Ronaldo, same with Luka Modric in the midfield, same with all of that. And then you look at their characteristics positionally and say, hey, these are the attributes of an elite player. If you rewind the tape a little bit, I think the confusion comes about. I'm going to talk about here, particularly in the United States. If you have LAFC, the club, for instance, playing a preseason game against a college team, and it's LAFC's first choice team, then they're probably going to look like Barcelona playing against some college roster. That might lead to a little bit of confusion. Because you're looking at this and you're like, wow, that's pretty incredible. This team is elite and these players are elite, but you've lost global context at that point. So talking about the players, if you look at Carlos Vela, who's on that LAFC team, he scores all these goals. He does all these assists. You watched him play against a college team. You watched him play against other MLS players. And all of a sudden you might want to coin him elite for the things that he does. And because it kind of resembles that FIFA World 11, in a certain regard when he's playing against that lower level competition. However, if you look at him when he was in Europe, he wasn't doing all of these things. He was still a decent player. He was still in the starting 11 or getting appreciable minutes. He was still doing some things, but definitely not to the level that he does it here in the United States. So I think that's the general frame. And maybe we can dive in a little bit deeper from there.
Yeah. And even in that kind of context too, you know, talking about elite teams versus elite players, like, well, maybe I can just ask you like this, like, can an elite player or do elite players exist on non-elite teams?
Well, I certainly think that happens. I'm not going to say more often than not, but it definitely does happen. How's that? And as evidence of that, you can maybe take a look at transfers as some verification. You regularly see transfers from non-elite clubs, non-elite teams to elite clubs and elite teams. And that kind of is a data point that this player might, you know, be of that caliber. And I think that is what gets a lot of people here in the States excited, because they get that external validation of a particular player. But I said might be an elite player, might. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are, or the purchasing club is correct. And then there's a whole slew of players that don't get that transfer happening for an amalgamation of reasons or a variety of reasons. And then that potentially elite player is stuck on a lower level team, never to be discovered or never to be propped up in the mainstream.
Some of the examples I'm thinking of American players that, you know, may or may not fit that elite category would be Landon Donovan. Landon Donovan moved from LA Galaxy and spent a little bit of time at Everton just on loan. So, you know, where does he fall in that elite category, that world best 11 category? And the other one, and I believe you wrote about this as well, was Clint Dempsey. And people, when Clint Dempsey was kind of at his peak playing for Fulham and playing in Europe, you know, people were labeling him world class, but I don't know if that's proper. I mean, he's a great American player, maybe the best American player of all time, but world class is a different category.
Well, there's levels, you know. So say Clint Dempsey gets transferred to that European team. Where was he? He's in Tottenham. Is that right?
Fulham and then Tottenham, yeah.
Fulham and then Tottenham. He gets transferred over there. Okay, those are nice transfers. Okay, he's leveled up. But, you know, from that point forward, there's a variety of other levels that you have to overcome in order for you to be in this discussion of world class. I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds about what is world class versus what isn't world class. But I think if you're in the FIFA World 11, if you are a, I don't know, a consistent performer, starter, undisputed starter, I should say, on one of these elite teams that we discussed about before, then you can maybe have a discussion about world class. But even then, it doesn't mean you are. I mean, you can be on the starting 11 consistently of Bayern Munich, but every starter in Bayern Munich is not a world class player, in my opinion, in my definition. You can be in the starting 11 of, I don't know, Manchester City consistently perform, but that doesn't mean you're a world-class player, in my opinion. So there's levels, John. The other one, if before we get off this topic of transferring, and that might being a signal that maybe there's something there, we can think about Haaland this past season. Red Bull Salzburg, they're playing in the Austrian First Division, performing well. And when you're in the Austrian First Division, nobody is considering you elite. Yeah, I mean, nobody in the general public, I should say. I shouldn't extend that to all the professionals who work in this space, because there are certainly some professionals who work in the space who can kind of identify players and say, oh my God, that is a next level player. But he transfers to Borussia Dortmund, and obviously everybody knows that he caught the world on fire by scoring a shit ton of goals in a limited number of games at the age of 19, I think, or 18. I forget his birth year. But yeah, that you can talk about that player as being elite. Again, there's the 2021 season, 2022 season, there's many seasons ahead of him. So let's see how he performs then.
Maybe talk about a little bit of the specifics of what makes up an elite player. Like you mentioned Haaland and how he scored a handful of goals in a very short time frame. So is it just goal scoring that makes somebody elite? Is it something else? Are there other characteristics that a player must have in order to fit that category, other than, you know, the subjectivity of making the FIFA Best 11 or playing for Barcelona? You also mentioned that, you know, even if you start for Barcelona week in, week out, that doesn't necessarily make you world-class player. And like a player that comes to mind is like Nelson Semedo, like great player. Or Sergio Roberto, great player, world class? No. So, like, what is the differentiator there? What are the some of the characteristics that you've identified that make a player world class?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because here's where we run into trouble. We just finished talking about a potential signal being a transfer or a club elevating you above your current position as being a signal. And people get it twisted and immediately jump to the conclusion that because Borussia Dortmund bought Haaland, that means something extraordinary. I mean, clubs purchase players all the times that get transferred and never amount to anything. So I'm glad you asked this question. Yeah, if you zoom in, if we take Haaland, for instance, yeah, he scored maybe an unprecedented amount of goals in a limited amount of time for a debutant in the Bundesliga, which is again a signal. But I'm also looking at the way he strikes the ball and the quality of his shots and the degree of difficulty of his shots. All of those sorts of things I can't really capture in a metric, which we discussed in a prior episode. But it's just the eye test. You know, I've seen so many patterns. I've seen so many strikers. I've studied, I should say, not just seen or not just watched, that you look at Haaland and the way he caresses the ball even upon receipt, and his hold up play and his capacity for assisting and filtered balls and his movement off the ball. And then finally the finishing and how he finishes specifically. They aren't Chicharito style finishes. They are they're essentially world-class sorts of finishes that, you know, leads me and, of course, the rest of the world to conclude that this is a special player. So, again, it's now zooming in from the general to the very specific details of a particular player. And I think I rattled off some key things there.
I'm going to try to drill down and see if we can, talk about some of the specifics. So is it just... you know, their technical ability? Is it just like their tactical, the way that they can kind of figure out the game? Is it a combination of the two? Is one more important than the other there? Like, I'm trying to figure out how somebody else might determine if, you know, their favorite player is world class, or how they might watch a game and determine if, you know, anybody on the field is world class or elite. Sorry.
No, we talked about Haaland. We'll stick with that. I mentioned his filtered balls, his capacity for assisting, his distribution. So all of those things require technique, you know, especially at that level. They require high level technique. So if you're looking at him, when he receives a pass, it is a very smooth reception of the ball. It's almost like he's cradling the ball when he receives it. Doesn't bounce off his foot like a Jesse Sardis. There are no accidentally good first touches like Jesse Sardis. He's receiving and cradling it, and it's completely under control and it's fluid. And then when he distributes it, it's the same sort of thing. It is a smooth distribution instead of a force or laborious sort of kick of the ball. It's more of a fluid stroke of the ball with the proper weight. And that could be with the inside of the foot, the outside of the foot, both feet, whatever. So those are just some of the eyeball test technical qualities that the player possesses. And if we're going to say that he possesses those things, well, we have to be calibrated to the world's best and how they receive and distribute a ball. So I think about Isco, I think about Iniesta, I think about Xavi, I think about Busquets, I think about all of these masterful technicians, and developing patterns in one's head as to how the reception distribution looks like with those players. And Haaland has commonalities with that, even as being a number nine, a striker, and not a central midfielder, which central midfielders are known for their technique. So he doesn't have the technique of those players that I just listed. You know, it doesn't look exactly like those players, but relative to his number nine peers, like a Luis Suarez, for instance, he has far superior technique, and it resembles those magicians in the midfield. So that's on the technical side. We could talk about striking, but it's going to be much the same as I just finished detailing. It resembles, you know, the master finishers of the game, master strikers of the game, in particular Batistuta. So if anybody wants to look up highlight clips of the Argentine striker from the 90s, they can do so and see and maybe see the marked resemblance in the finishing capabilities of both those players. And Batistuta was considered back in his day as a world-class number nine, world-class striker. And then the smoothness of Hernan Crespo, if people want to look up Hernan Crespo, also a number nine for the Argentine national team, played at the highest levels in Italy when Italy was the preeminent league in the world. His transfer fees were record-breaking as well, but Crespo didn't have that sort of finishing. It's a different sort of finishing. I'm saying look at Crespo's reception and technique on the ball, and it resembles Haaland, resembles Hernan Crespo. So Haaland kind of has the combination of both those strikers, which is interesting because when both those strikers, since they were of the same era in the Argentine national team, it always was a huge controversy as to who was the starter, who wasn't, or should we play with two number nines? And I don't know, just interesting times. So that's on the technical side. And then on the tactical side, which I don't know if I popularize soccer IQ, to be honest with you, John, or not, but everybody talks about soccer IQ now. I kind of don't like it anymore. But soccer IQ is all about decision-making and being able to make the right decisions on and off the ball. Which is really tactics, okay, to a certain degree. And Haaland has a high capacity for that as well. His runs off the ball, I don't know how to describe that without visual aids, but his runs off the ball resemble those of world-class strikers. He knows where to be to put himself in a good position. And then tactically, man, like if his back is to goal and he's far away from goal, he's not trying to do stupid shit and try to turn in into defenders. He's playing simple, laying off the pass, retaining position for his team. And then if he's facing goal, he knows when to dribble and when to pass, when to shoot as well. So those wins and in what contexts, those decision-making attributes. If you do it right and it looks like the world-class players of years past and current years, then again, now you're in the elite world-class discussion.
I think the takeaway I'm leaving that little section with is the pattern recognition. So being able to recognize the patterns of number one, elite players, and then players that resemble those elite players as well. And you can kind of look back through history, okay, who was the man in, you know, the 90s or the 80s, whatever, and then what is a player now? How does a player now resemble that same player? So you gave a couple of different examples of, you know, world-class number nines or elite level number nines, and, you know, recognizing those same patterns with a young and up and coming player now, I think is a very good measuring stick. And like you mentioned earlier too, like a player might be on a team that is not a Barcelona level, a Real Madrid level, a Liverpool level, but then when they transfer, and all of a sudden, you know, they're starting with Liverpool or something like that. Well, you know, they possessed all those things beforehand, and now they're entering that, you know, elite level category because they're also on the elite level team. So I think the pattern recognition is something that is important when you're trying to identify whether a player, you know, possesses these abilities or not.
Critically important, and it's critically important to have that pattern recognition to identify when you're not on an elite team and you don't have, as a fan or maybe even a practitioner, when you don't have that signal that maybe a player is good and they're on a lower level team or struggling on a lower level team, if you can identify these features, then you can correctly say, oh, he's not having success because the team doesn't understand him or her and doesn't enable you or that player, particular player, to shine at the highest levels. So for instance, a good number of players who come from Europe in their 30s, you know, at the tail end of their careers to MLS, for instance, and this is something our audience can relate to, who were world-class or were close to world-class or were at least, you know, in that upper echelon of players worldwide. When they come to the league here, some of them end up struggling and end up looking like crap or like shit. And it's not that they're not phenomenal players. It's simply that who they are surrounded with and then the setup or lack thereof of the team as a whole from a tactical perspective does not play to the strengths of the player. And then you end up not looking like an elite striker, midfielder, defender. For instance, Andrea Pirlo, when he came over here, this is one of the most elegant players to ever play the game, even leading up to his last seasons. Over there in Italy, still had it. He had everything. He didn't lose anything. And he comes to New York City FC, and he looks like an average Joe, even if that. I mean, there might be one moment of brilliance here or there, but it's not like every one of his possessions led to something special. And that's due to, you know, the environment that he's in.
Yeah, you've highlighted before, it would look a lot different if Iniesta was plucked out of FC Barcelona's midfield and dropped into like Columbus Crew, or, you know, would he even make it to the Columbus Crew if he was an American player, because the skills that he possesses aren't or weren't valued here in the American system.
100%. Or drop Andres Iniesta in the U.S. men's national team, surround him with Jossi in front of him, put McKennie next to him, put, I don't know, Jackson Ewell behind him or Paxton Pomacall to his right, and Andres Iniesta is going to look like a fool playing football. He's not going to look like Andres Iniesta. It doesn't mean the player's not elite.
And that's something maybe that fans can keep an eye on too, is that, you know, when we have these guys that are out in these other environments, Christian Pulisic, for example, with Chelsea, surrounded by, you know, high-level players all the time, when he comes back and plays with the U.S. men's national team and doesn't perform quite to his Chelsea level or Borussia Dortmund level, Is it because Christian is not a good player, or is it because he is surrounded by players that are very subpar? And I think you can make this, you can also make the same argument for a number of different players that go back to their national teams, you know, that play for Real Madrid, that play for Barcelona, that, you know, Man City, whatever, and then they go back to their respective national teams and they're kind of in the same situation as Christian. That's just something that people need to be aware of. It's not that Christian is better or worse with Chelsea or with the national team, but there's just many other factors involved in that as well.
Correct. And hence how we started out the episode, team versus individual. The individual, on the individual side, it's not all objectivity. It's not looking at goals, assists, pass completion percentage, these ridiculous metrics that people now concoct up out of the analytics department and everybody latches onto. That's not going to tell you whether a player is X, Y, or Z. There's just too many variables.
Outside of technical and tactical things that we kind of mentioned, is there anything else that goes into, you know, making an elite player an elite player?
Sure. So there are two other components. I mean, traditionally or conventionally, they split up player attributes in four compartments. It's the technical, the tactical, the psychological/mental, okay, and the physical. So we talked technical, we talked tactical, we talked about being properly calibrated with the world's best in order for you to accurately make comparisons or make better comparisons, I should rather say. And then the other two components, mental and the physical, are important as well. Okay, but they aren't as important as the technical and tactical, because if you don't have those two, then you're completely out of the discussion. We shouldn't speak of a player as elite if they don't have the technical and the tactical components at a particular minimum required. By contrast, if we look at the physical components, there's just such a broad spectrum of body types and physical attributes among the world's best historically and currently, that since it's broad, the minimum required to enter into that category isn't as rigorous or isn't as stringent as the others. For instance, you can look at a Pirlo again, since we just mentioned him, and Pirlo was a slow-ass player. Slow. He wasn't beating anybody in a 40-yard dash, okay? And then on the agility and mobility side, okay, he had some of that, but definitely you wouldn't look at this guy in an NFL combine and say he is a phenomenal, quote-unquote, athlete. And then contrast that with a Cristiano Ronaldo, which is on the other end of the spectrum, which is a physical specimen. Look at that wide breadth of possibilities that the physical attributes of a player can fall inside of and still be considered an elite or world-class player. It's just that you need the technique and the tactical components aligned and at a particular level. If you're lower end on the physical spectrum, like a Pirlo, well, you better be a badass technician and a badass brain on the soccer field. If you're on the high end, like a Cristiano Ronaldo on the physical, well, maybe your technique and tactics don't have to be as brilliant as Pirlo, but they still have to be very, very, very good. I mean, I don't think anybody will raise an eyebrow if we say that Cristiano Ronaldo's technique and tactical understanding isn't at the highest levels.
You also mentioned psychological, and I want to make sure to get the proper distinction between like using your brain for tactics and then using your brain for things like the psychological aspects of the game, which could or could not be on the field or off the field. So how does the psychological aspect play into this of, you know, the making of an elite?
Yeah. So this has nothing to do with the mental psychological stuff of understanding the game, the tactical, right? This is a completely separate compartment, which is all about being a quote unquote professional, meaning to give an extreme example, you know, stories that people may have read of Cristiano again, first to training, last to leave. He goes to Manchester United, tells, I don't know what the gentleman's name is at Manchester United, said, hey, I want to be the best in the world, and did everything that was required of him to be the best in the world outside of the bare minimum. The bare minimum meaning you just show up to training, And then when training is over, you're done. You go home. You don't do any other football until you repeat the cycle the following day. That's certainly not Cristiano. He does a lot of stuff outside of training, beforehand and after, to the point where his own world-class colleagues or elite colleagues or international colleagues, you know, are in awe of his work ethic. So work ethic is definitely one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is not being a mental midget, meaning if your performance isn't up to par, you're not performing well, you're not scoring goals, or your touch is off, or you're having a bad run of form, four or five games that you suck, that you don't collapse and say, oh, this isn't for me, I'm not good enough, you know, and you shrivel up into a little, and then go down this slippery slope into the abyss, never to recover. You have to be mentally strong. You have to say, hey, fuck it. You know, I'm not playing well. I'm just going to grind through this whole thing. I don't know what the issue is, but I still think I'm an incredibly good player. I still think I have enormous potential. I still, you know, am going to work my ass off and not let this affect me. So those are two things there, John.
So sounds like it can be kind of broken down into four different categories. We had the physical side, technical, tactical, and then the psychological. Is there anything else that goes into an elite player? Is there anything that we didn't mention about one of those four categories?
No, well, some other another thing cropped up right now, talking about the psychological and the mental strength. Another pitfall is once these players start making a lot of money, it's easy to say, oh, I have $5 million in the bank, or I have $32 million in the bank, or I have $1.5 million in the bank. And if it doesn't work out for me, it's fine. I have enough to retire. I don't have to work another day in my life. And I think a lot of players go down that route and then end up mediocre players for the rest of their careers, or their careers are run short because they're not up to snuff and they're cut. And then instead of going from Red Bull Salzburg in the Austrian division to Borussia Dortmund, you're going from Borussia Dortmund, you know, to Red Bull Salzburg, and your career starts slipping. So that goes back to professionalism. That goes back to that mental fortitude and a good psychological outlook to continue working hard and improving your craft and being the best that you can be. Regarding the other components, John, nothing else is coming to mind freshly. Anyways, there is a whole bunch that can still be gone into, but at the moment, there's nothing really blinking.
Yeah, the example I was thinking of as you were talking about that last part was like a Memphis Depay. I don't know if that's what happened to him, you know, but it seemed like he acquired quite a bit of notoriety at a very, you know, early stage in his career, made a big transfer, and then kind of just fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of examples. Let's say that you get transferred to a new team, and you weren't the coach's decision. It was management that wanted you transferred. So the management made the purchase, not the coach. And the coach doesn't like you. Doesn't play you. Doesn't treat you well in training. Isn't really friendly with you. You know, that can cause a player to mentally shut down. And again, while there's external factors beating against you, if you are mentally strong, which you need to be, you need to overcome that. Hey, you know what? It's fine. I'm going to keep doing my thing. I'm going to control what I can control and let the cards fall how they fall. That's mental strength. Those are the qualities of a player who can make it. And we talked about being a multimillionaire and that impact here in MLS. It's quite strange to see a lot of these homegrown players sign contracts for $50,000 or $70,000 or even $100,000 a year, which is absolute peanuts. Okay, you can barely survive in the United States with those sorts of salaries. And they think they've made it. You know, they think, oh my God, I'm getting paid 90 G's. They think they've made it, and they don't continue working as hard. And they buy themselves a nice little car. They, you know, move out of the parents' house, get themselves an apartment, get a little girlfriend. They have some spending money. And all of a sudden, their careers don't progress and they go to shit. And next thing you know, they're playing USL or just having mediocre, non-elite, non-bright careers here in the league. Very sad thing to see. The reason that happens is an interesting conversation, but let's just stick to you know, that fourth component, the mental component, that's something that players should not fall victim to if they want to get to the highest levels.
Well, it sounds like we can have another conversation about just that topic alone that you just mentioned. So that could be a whole episode in itself.
And wrapping it up, listen, it has to be the technical and the tactical are paramount. That cannot be sacrificed. And then the psychological and the physical, while those are critically important, if you want to get to the top of the pile, there's a wide breadth. There's more tolerance there. There's more room for error in those sorts of things. And you can still be an elite player. But the technical and tactical are holy.
Our flagship program helps coaches and trainers discern what is good for their teams and for their players. But now we've created a program for parents. Because parents, you are personal trainers too. Yep, that's right. And in order to properly mentor your player, you need to know what's good and what's not. Just like coaches, you and your player are flooded with thousands of training videos on YouTube and Instagram. But most of them are a waste of time because they aren't relevant. They don't translate to the real game. And figuring out what does and what doesn't, and why, is just flat out difficult, especially if you don't have a background in soccer to lean on. So we've taken Brian Kleiben's more than 20 years of experience working with teams and individual players, from U9 to U19, and extracted valuable lessons that can help you navigate the minefield that is American youth soccer. But this isn't just about drills. That's only a small fraction of it. And to be honest, you can get drills anywhere. What you're getting with the 343 Masterclass are the cultural lessons and an education in philosophy that other trainers and courses don't offer. It's these elements that can help you understand the landscape, read the game on and off the field, and translate everything into real development for your player. Right now, you can get on the list for the 343 Masterclass. We are currently rolling it out little by little to small groups. To reserve your spot, go to 343masterclass.com. All right, thank you for listening. Do you have a question about the topic that we covered in this episode? If so, we'd love to hear from you, and we will be answering some of your questions at the end of next week's episode. Submit your questions on Twitter or head to 343coaching.com to leave your question in the comment section. Make sure that you are subscribed to 343 FM on your favorite podcasting app. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and many more platforms. And if you're feeling super generous, we'd love it if you dropped us a 5-star rating or a review. And don't forget that you can find our entire library of podcast episodes, over 200 written articles, and our online courses that help accelerate the development of coaches and players using methods that have been proven to work here in the United States. Once again, all of that can be found at 343coaching.com. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time here on the 343 Podcast.